Good morning, Cedarville, and welcome to chapel. And I want to start by saying that I can hardly believe I'm standing here. In about the mid-90s, I'll tell you this quick story. In the mid-90s, I used to listen to CDR Radio Network, and I used to hear live broadcast of Cedarville Chapel, and I had no idea what this room looked like, and I only had a vision and could hear chapel being broadcast, and now we live stream it, right? So I used to just pray to the Lord, like, someday I hope I get to see that chapel. And then in 2008, I got hired here, and I remember my first day sitting in chapel and in the back and just being in awe of being in a room with 3,000 young people, just praising the Lord and worshiping Him. And I just couldn't believe I was here. And then today, this many years later, here I am. And so I want to say to all of you that you never know what the Lord has for you, and you may end up being on the stage. And what an honor and privilege. I want to say that I'm going to talk to you about faith today, and I first want to take a moment to thank everybody. I have my nursing family here. I have at least, they told me this morning, Team Angie, like probably about 500 nursing students and family here, so I want to thank them. I've had multiple prayers and texts and emails, and so just thank you for that. And I really just want to honor the Lord. So I'm talking to you about faith today. So what is faith? So Hebrews 11:1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." So what is the substance that we hope for? Why do we have hope? Well, God is the substance that we hope for, right? God is our faith. And then it says the evidence of things not seen, but I contend that this is not true. I believe that we're just not looking and that the evidence is all around us. And as I share my personal testimony this morning, you're gonna see where I'll point out to you where the evidence is always around us. However, faith is not always easy. And we're human and we have doubts. And I have doubts and you have doubts. And the Lord knows that. And so I have doubts as being the dean, and I have doubts in my leadership role and when I'm leading as a mom and as a professor and as a nurse, have doubts. And that's part of the humanness of us. And then I want to tell you that on October 1st in 2018, I was sitting where you're sitting, and Dr. Toonstra gave his personal testimony on this stage. And it was amazing, and that's the slide that you see. His story, his faith, and his testimony was about the endurance and the courage he had, and when the Lord just sustained him through some really personal hard times. And I remember just praying to God at the end of that testimony and asking Him, "Lord, would I have that kind of faith that I would need, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or like Dr. Toonstra, or like all the other Bible characters that you have that demonstrate that faith?" And I just remember thinking to Him, "Lord, just if I ever need that faith, I want to have that faith, and I want to be able to share that with people." So as today was approaching, and I was preparing for what the Lord had for me to share with you all, I am a kind of a creature of habit. And so every Saturday morning, I clean for about 2 hours at my house. But October 29th, and that date is significant. So just 3 weeks ago, on Saturday morning, October 29th, I want you to remember that date, I had decided that I was going to get up and I was going to finalize my slide deck, and I was going to pen my words for what I was going to say to you guys today. And but my habit of wanting to clean was racing in my mind. So I was sitting at my table with all my stuff spread out in my slide deck, and I had to get up and clean. So I was up cleaning my house, and I was into cleaning. I was cleaning everything. My mind was racing. I would sometimes go back to the table and pen a few thoughts that He put in my mind, and then I would go back and I would cleaning. I got to vacuuming, and I'm vacuuming, and I have like half the living room left, right? And I've done all the rooms, and I got this cordless Dyson vac that I love, and I'm just cleaning away. And all of a sudden, that thing stops, and I got like half the room left. I mean, it just stopped. And I was like, what the world? I got to get back to the table. So I look down and there's this light flashing and it says filter, filter, right? So I undo the filter and I look at it and it just struck me. This is what I saw. And my filter was clogged. And so I'm like, okay, Lord, I need to go clean out the filter. I need to go rinse this out and get back so I can get on with my morning, right? And as I was walking to the laundry room to rinse my filter, I was like, object lesson. And every good educator in this room knows that I have about 10 minutes of your attention. So, Lord, if you want me to talk about this, I'm going to talk about this first before I give my testimony. So, I believe that there's a lot of people in this room right now that are feeling stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, maybe paralyzed, not sure if you can get on with the rest of the semester, or just what the Lord has for your life. And so I'm saying to you today that we're going to talk about you need to clean your filter, and you need to do that daily. And you need to, no Bible, no breakfast. You need to be working on your sanctification daily. And just remember this, Christ has already done the hard work for us at the cross, and all we gotta do is ask him. So now this is what it's gonna look like. This is what you're gonna feel like after we clean out your filter. So we're gonna go to the Lord in prayer. Dear Jesus, we come to you this morning, and we are just in awe of how awesome you are, how sovereign you are. We love you, Lord, and we thank you for loving us. We thank you for all the work that you already done at the cross. And we are sorry when we doubt and when we forget to clean out our filter, Lord. And we just come to you this morning. There's just so many people in this room that have so many burdens, and maybe they have a little bit of a clogged filter or half clogged, or maybe they're just about ready to stop and throw in the towel, Lord. Please just be with them today. Clean their filter. Lift them, sustain them, and just thank you for loving us. As I share the rest of my testimony this morning, Lord, thank you for this object lesson that you put on my heart, and just help them see your glory in my story, because really, Lord, it's your story. I love you so much, Lord. It's in your name we pray. Amen. All right. So, thank you, Dr. Wood, for that introduction. And I do a lot of things, but I'm just wired like that, okay? So just hang with me. I talk fast, and you got to hang with me. But I am the dean for the School of Nursing, and I'm also a major in the Air National Guard, and I'm the chief nurse officer there. So I'm the chief nurse officer in two big roles, and it's a privilege to serve in those roles, but they're pretty big. But what I want you to know is that I have this elevator speech that's going to be about 3 minutes to tell you all about me in a nutshell. So I am first and foremost, which you've already heard, a child of God. And that is by design. And so all of you in this room are children of God by design. So literally, I am a first generation Christian. I was not raised in a Christian home, but it was a loving home, but it wasn't a Christian home. But God had his hand on my life as early as I can remember, like 3 years old. I am a product of bus ministry, and Bob and Linda Kemp would come to my house every Saturday, and they would pick me up on Sunday on the bus. And they were faithful to the Lord. And I also was a vacation Bible school junkie, and I went to church camp, and I just was always any place I could go. And so I just want you to know that all those ministries are important. So if you're participating in any of those, church camp or VBS or Sunday school or Awana, any of those things are all important, because that's where little kids get to hear about Jesus and learn how much he loves them. And so he's just had his hand on my life and your life forever. And so make sure that you honor him in return. And then also, I'm a nurturer, I'm a nurse. So I've wanted to be a nurse since I was 5 years old, and I didn't even know what that meant. But I have nurtured children and animals, and I worked Special Olympics and did Hike for the Handicap, and just always trying to foster the development of people around me. And that is just another calling that has been in my life. And it's all about relationships and relationship-based care. And when we think about relationships, we know that people are have a void in their heart and they're always looking for something. And so we all know that what they're looking for is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And so I really work daily to try to foster the development of that relationship with others just by being obedient to him, which is the third and final O in my CNO. And I'm obedient and I embrace every opportunity. And I just want you to be open to that. Sometimes things just seem super crazy, but you should embrace the opportunities that the Lord puts before you. And he's in the midst of those opportunities. I'm only 54 years old, but I have like 200 plus years of experience of things going on, and I only get to share a snapshot of about 4 months with you. But I want you to know that being obedient to the Lord pays off in the times when you need him. Okay, so that's me in a nutshell. But here's my favorite roles. I'm a mother of four. I've been married for 36 years. I have an incredible husband. And I'm a Gigi of six grandchildren. I'm a grandmother of six grandchildren. And I'm a child of God. And those three things, being a mom and a Gigi and a child of God, are my favorite things in life. So here's getting ready to start my testimony. I'm going to take you through about 4 months of sheer craziness. Okay, but the Lord is with me. So I'm going to tee up this journey. And and the golf ball holds significance. So hang with me here. The golf ball holds significance. But I do want you to look behind the golf ball and you can see in the firmament God's handiwork. And I'm telling you, if you just look, God is evident in everything. So, okay. So remember October 29th is when I got the object lesson? Well, October 29th of 2018, I woke up at about 2 o'clock in the morning and I had a headache. And that is unusual for me. I don't wake up in the middle of the night and I didn't typically have headaches. Took two Tylenol, went back to sleep, got back up at 6 a.m. with the alarm, headaches back. It's kind of weird. So I get up and I take some more Tylenol, and on Monday I practice, I see patients. So I got to my practice and I was seeing patients all day, and I found myself having this headache all day, and I was starting to tell my patients, like, they say, how are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm doing well, but I have this headache. And that's not like me. So anyway, the week rolls on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and I am eating Tylenol and Motrin like candy. And I can't shake this headache. And I'm starting to tell my nursing family, my friends, my colleagues, I'm like, I got this really bad headache. And then Friday morning, I was with students and we were in Springfield and we were doing a Shoes for the Shoeless ministry. And I was bending over and I was fitting a child for a new pair of shoes. And that is such a joy anytime that you can serve right. But when I was bending over, I had this like swish, swish, swish headache going on and I just couldn't bear the pain anymore. So I told my friends and my students that I needed to go see a doctor. Now, I had already tried a massage, and I'd even went to my PA friend. Her husband is a dentist, and he'd had headaches, and Botox had worked for him, and I even had some Botox injections. Like, I was trying to fight this headache, but this Friday morning, there was no fighting it, and so I left, and I went to see Dr. Sherritt, and he's across the road, and that is also my collaborating physician. The Lord orchestrates everything. So I went to Dr. Sherritt's office, and told him I had this really bad headache, and guess what he diagnosed me with? Stress. He said, you have a tension headache, and I think that we need to figure out what's causing your stress, and he gave me some medications, and I was like, no, there's nothing different in my life stress-wise. Like, everything's the same, Lord, Dr. Sherritt, and I'm thinking about this to the Lord. Dr. Sherritt is a big man of faith, but he did not trust me. And so I left there and I told him, like, okay, but if this headache gets any worse, I'm gonna have to have a CAT scan. He's like, you don't need a CAT scan. So I had military drill that weekend. So I went to Columbus and still eating that Tylenol and Motrin like candy, not getting any pain relief. I even took half a Tramadol, which is a big deal for me to take that high powerful pain medicine, Tramadol, half of it one. And then Saturday night, there was a military ball. And I was at it with Dr. Wagner and her husband, and he is our military pastor, sat at the table with them, and I could not enjoy the meal. And then I am a line dancing fanatic, and they were doing boot scoop boogie and Macarena and electric slide, and I could not partake. I could not get up and do it, and I knew something was wrong. So I went back to the base, and I slept in the hangar. I didn't even drive home because my pain was so bad. And I slept there, and then Sunday I text Dr. Sherritt, and then I called him, and I told him I really need a CAT scan. And he said, okay, we'll get one. And Monday morning, I went back to the office, and I'm seeing patients, and literally the pain struck me, and it took me to my knees. I mean, I'm in the nurse's station, and I'm sitting on the ground. I'm like, I need a CAT scan now. So this is Monday, November 5th, 1 week later after this headache started. And that evening, I went through my day, but that evening, I had a CAT scan at 5 p.m., and Dr. Higginbotham came with me to the Lord just, I'm leaving out so many details, but the Lord was just in it all the time. And so, and I had such a support system. And so I'm in Beaver Creek and sitting in the waiting room, and there's Dr. Higginbotham just being with me and praying with me and supporting me. And then I get my CAT scan and I go see some patients at a nursing home on the way home, and I'm driving home. It's about 7 o'clock. I'm about 12 minutes from my house. And Dr. Sherritt calls, and he says, what are you doing? And I said, I'm driving home. He said, I need you to pull over. And I said, okay. So I pulled over. And he said, okay, you have a pretty big brain mass, a brain tumor, and you have increased intracranial pressure. And I was like, kind of relieved that I wasn't crazy, that I knew that I had this really bad pain going on. But what he then proceeded to tell me that it was an astrocytoma. That's what the radiologist thought it was an astrocytoma. And that's pretty much a death sentence. And Senator John McCain had just died in August of 2018 with the same thing. And he's an amazing man. So then I was like, okay, Dr. Sherritt. And he's like, you need to stop driving. You need to go home. You need to get your husband. You need high dose steroids. And I'm going to call the neurosurgeon and you need to see him first thing in the morning. And I'm like, okay. And literally the dialogue that I had with the Lord for the remainder of that 12 minute ride home was I was reaching out to him, and I just felt at peace. I mean, I really had the peace that surpasses understanding. And when I got home, November 5th was the day, and that was my 28th wedding anniversary too. Like, you can't, like, these things happen and you can't make them up, right? So I walk in and I tell my husband, happy anniversary. And I think we planned on going out to dinner, but that all changed. And then I said, guess what? My headache is real. And I told him about my little friend, my astrocytoma. And we just prayed. And then we got in the car. We went and got the medicine at Walgreens. Like, we went and got the high-dose steroids. And I took it. And I called Dr. Sherritt Tuesday morning. And I woke up Tuesday morning with no pain. Like, literally, the pain had been taken from me. So this incredible pain that I had, this swishing noise, I'd never experienced again. It's almost like you kind of feel like the tumor's gone because you don't have that pain anymore, right? So the next morning, me and my husband go to see the neurosurgeon together. And here's a picture of my little friend. And it's right there. You see, it's right there. There's two pictures there. One is of my brain tumor, and the significance of my little friend and the golf ball is that it measured 4.2 centimeters, and that's the exact size of a golf ball. So you can have a real visual of what I had inside my head. I had a little golf ball sitting in there. It was wreaking havoc on me. Okay, so, but the Lord was there, and there was so much good news in my encounter with that with the neurosurgeon. His name is Dr. Booz. He's a man of God. And so that was very empowering. And what he told me was good news. He said, I want you to know that I don't think you have an astrocytoma. I think that this is a meningioma. And it's probably been growing for the last 10 or 15 years. And you're pretty much blessed that this showed up with a headache, because lots of times people have seizures and wreck their cars or go into a coma. And so your increased intracranial pressure was just telling you to seek help and get the CAT scan. So anyways, he said that this was urgent but not emergent, like less than 12 hours before it was emergent and I thought I was gonna die. And now he's telling me it's urgent but not emergent. And there were some mixed signals in there, because he told me that I did need to have a craniotomy, I needed to have a brain surgery, and we need to remove that. And he would not know if it was benign or malignant until he got in there, but it wasn't a rush, and that he thought that I should go home, enjoy the holidays with my family, and we would do this surgery at the first of the year, and he would manage my pain and my increased intracranial pressure, which the pain was gone, and I was taking the high-dose steroids. So this is where this is game on for me, right? Okay, so this is what's next. So, in this slide, I just want you to see that I really am solid. So this is post-surgery, and my tumor is removed, and the increase in intracranial pressure is gone, and things had shifted back to where they're supposed to be, and all in all, I'm solid. But when I do forget things, I blame it on joy. We're going to talk about joy. Okay, so I'm game on, right? And I'm like, this has changed my whole world. And I do what every child of God would do, and I nickname my tumor Joy, right? And so my family thought I was crazy. My kids are like, Mom, really? I'm like, yep, we got Joy going on here. So I'm going to tell you why I nicknamed my tumor Joy. So I'm going to give you the theme. It's out of James. James is our chapter, right, about trials and tribulations and having faith. And so James' primary theme is living out one's faith, being a doer and not just a hearer of the word. And then I'm going to read a little bit more of this passage, but James 1, 2 through 4 kind of became my anthem during this time of trying to deal with joy and having game on in my life. So it's James 1, 2 through 7 says, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given to him. But let him ask in faith with no doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea that is driven and tossed by the wind." Okay, so let me tell you, if you're working from a bucket list, you can get people around you to mobilize, okay? So this is my family. And remember, this is my favorite role, but I was not 100% sure that if I was to go be at home with the Lord, that everyone in my family was going to be there with me one day. So that became paramount in my life, right? And it became about my family and my friends and my students and everyone that I know. I just wanted to make sure that everybody that I had a chance to share as much as I could, because I thought I might only have a little bit of time left. So we had never gotten a family picture before. This is our first family picture. So we got a family picture. A lot of other things happened. The Lord was in all that. Everybody showed up to decorate the Christmas tree. And I went on a family vacation over the holidays, and we were all together. And it was just a really good time. And then I had January 7th rolled around, and so I had joy removed, and this is a picture. Now, I had a little golf ball in my head, so I was expecting a little hole when I woke up from surgery, but I had this big, look at this big incision I had, and it's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive, but the Lord was with me. I'm telling you, when I went into surgery on January 7th, I was so at peace. I mean, nobody could believe it, and I couldn't believe it either. And my family thought that I was not telling them the truth. They thought that all this was not even really true. And I'm like, no, I'm telling you, we don't know, but I'm at peace at whatever happens. Like, because to die is to gain, right? So I was just totally at peace. So I came out of surgery and I'm recovering well, 3 days out of surgery. I'm sitting up in my bed and I remember eating a half of a cheeseburger and fries, and they tasted so good. And I got done with my meal and I got a little nauseated and I started feeling funny. And I was supposed to go home. I was cleared. And it was supposed to be a 3-day hospital stay. I was supposed to go home. And I'm starting to tell my best friend and my daughter that something's wrong. Something's going on inside my head. And nobody believes me. Nobody believes me again. And so I got a little emotional and I'm like, I'm telling you, something's not right. So my best friend went out and got the nurse and she came in, and I quickly was taken back for a scan, and I came back to the room and I'm getting a little bit worse and a little bit worse. I'm starting to see some floaters and I'm just feeling really nauseous. And the radiologist read my scan as negative. And then I said, that can't be true. And my neurosurgeon came in to see me, Dr. Booz, and I told him what I was experiencing. And he came back, he said, let me go look at the scan. And he came back in and he said, you're having a stroke. And I was rushed back to the ICU, to the neuro ICU. And I really was lost about 5 days, which is, it's another God thing, right? Because I don't remember that, and that's good. But my 3-day stay turned into an 11-day stay. And when I woke up from, I didn't get intubated, but I was pretty much unresponsive and unconscious. When I woke up, I thought it was 2012. I didn't know my left from my right, and I was walking into things, right? And I was like a hot mess, okay? But I wanted to go home. Like, I was awake, and I wanted to go home. So January 18th, I got to go home 11 days after my brain surgery, and I'm on what I call the devil's medicine. It's Coumadin. It's a blood thinner. And when I went home, I just had such incredible support. Like, the Lord had put so much support in my life, and my faith, I thought, was unshakable, and I was just so solid in my faith. And then my daughter was on her second, seeking her second degree from Cedarville, my oldest daughter, and she had finished and had a degree in social work, and she had an amazing job, but she decided she wanted to be a nurse, so she was back in our nursing program. And she had started back with clinicals. We're now in January. I went home on January 18th. And so there was a plan in place before I even got discharged, and my son would babysit for her, and he was 21, and he would babysit for her, and I was going to be the backup plan, right? So I went home. And then I got to go a little fast forward here, but this is the second part of my story. This is where my faith really got shaken, okay? So this is baby Rowan, and baby Rowan is 7 months old. And on February 4th, which is a Monday, baby Rowan, and I'm only like, what, almost one month out from this whole big surgery, baby Rowan was being babysat at my house by my son, but he was teething. And so I got to hold him for 4 or 5 hours that whole day. What a blessing. And try to console him. And then on February 5th, on her second day back to clinical at Children's Medical Center, she put baby Rowan down for a nap in our spare bedroom, and she left, and I played with the other grandkids, and then I went to take a nap. And I'm never gonna forget that I heard this horrific, horrific, blood-curdling scream of "Mom!" from my son, and I just about was to fall asleep for a nap. I got to my bed, and there is my son. He kicked the door, and he's holding baby Rowan, and there's this baby that is pale and limp. And I said, "Give me that baby, call 911. Now, I just kicked into nurse mode, right? So now I am delivering CPR. I lay the baby on the bed and I'm delivering CPR to my 7-month-old grandson. Unbelievable. And the entire time I am yelling out to the Lord and I am talking to him. And he, 911 came and I heard the sirens, and just the Lord was there the whole time, but now my faith is shaking and now I'm a little bit with the Lord, right? So I I go into my bathroom. They take the baby and I go into my bathroom and I'm sitting literally on the bathroom floor. And this is a picture of my bathroom wall. And I'm looking at this picture. I'm just yelling out to the Lord and I'm asking him, why? Why is all these things happening? Why, you know, I've trusted you, I obey you. And why are you letting this happen? And then Dean Lefevre levitates in. She's never even been to my house before. And God just brought her to me and she was like my angel. And I was within minutes. I don't know how she knows this happened. And she comforts me and we pray. And then I got to get up. I got to get to the hospital because they've taken baby Rowan to the hospital. And I know that my daughter is going to be going to the hospital and I need to now go take care of my daughter, right? I got to hurry. Okay. I knew this was going to happen. So on the way to the hospital, I'm talking to the Lord the whole way there, and I'm thinking that I'm going to walk into this chaotic, terrible scene that I've seen over the past 20 years as an ER nurse. Like, I know what's happening in there when a child does not make it, and I knew that my grandson was already dead when he left my hands. I knew that. My daughter calls me, and she says she's on her way from Children's Medical Center, and she asked me, God, she's like, baby Rowan's going to be all right. Right, Mom? And I'm like, She said, he just stopped breathing, but they're going to get his breathing back, right? And I'm like, So I just don't know what to expect. So I said, it doesn't look good is what I tell her. So we get to the ER, and I'm expecting to go in to see just total chaos. But what I encountered was, again, it was like I walked into the trauma resuscitation bay where my grandson was, where my daughter and my son-in-law were, and tons of people, and there was just, it was almost like I'd entered heaven. There was a youth pastor in there, and he was blessing baby Rowan and offering him to the Lord and blessing everybody in the room, and it was just amazing. And then we went into the family grief room, which they shouldn't even call it that, right? But we went into the family grief room for a gathering, and here's the Lord again. We're praying. I mean, Dr. Sher is there, and Major Harden is there, and they're telling us the legal stuff that we have to do because it's unexpected infant death. But then Major Bill Harden prays over us. He's praying, and I am just sobbing, and my faith is like, whew, and I don't know, but I said, Lord, I need strength. And then I looked out of the corner of my eye, and up on the wall was this passage. And I literally asked the Lord for the strength that it talks about in this passage, and then he just gave it to me because I knew that I needed to be there for my daughter because my daughter had just lost her 7-month-old baby. This was our drive to this building, and it was the baby had to have an autopsy. And so they asked me to drive them, and it's the first day that I'd been cleared to drive. And the whole way there, I'm talking to the Lord, like, Lord, I don't know what's going to happen when we go see this baby, but they're going to rock the baby and see the baby one last time before the service. And I was at the light and I looked up and there was the Lord. And I just took a picture. This is a picture when I was driving them. And the Lord just sustains us always. And there's his handiwork again in the firmament, right? And then this is the end. This was the picture that they used at Baby Rowan's celebration of life. And what I want you to hear is that the celebration of life was the absolute best service that could have ever happened. And the pastor used Romans to talk to there was about 500 people at the service. About 300, we would estimate, were people that know God and were believers. And in Romans, he used Romans 8:25-28 to kind of console the believers and reiterate the faith that we have in the Lord. And then there's about 200 people there that heard the gospel for the first time through baby Rowan. And he just used this picture and was talking about God is right, just as baby Rowan's reaching out for this ball, God is right there. And we just need to reach out to him. He's always right there with us, for us, sustaining us. It wasn't easy. It's still not easy. It's been 4 years. I learned over the summer, I had to work through some lamenting, but I do know that the darker our sorrow is, the darker our clouds are, the deeper mercy that God provides us, and I am confident that God is with us in all of our circumstances, and you can trust him. Just real quick, I just know that this is Baby Roland. We celebrate Heaven Day. We celebrate his birthday. And now it's 4 years later. And it is my job to, Baby Roland has influenced more people than I or you or probably ever will get to. But I want you to know that that we can be confident in our faith. The Lord is our substance. And even if you think that you don't see him, start looking around and you do, okay? And you may be dismissed. Thank you for your attention.